from the JAMA Network. This is JAMA Neurology Author Interviews. Conversations with authors exploring the latest clinical research, reviews, and opinions featured in JAMA Neurology.
I'm Dr. Cynthia Armand, JAMA Neurology web editor and assistant professor of neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Montefiore Medical Center. Today I have Dr. Joshua Lang here to discuss risk factors and prognosis of early post-traumatic seizures in moderate to severe traumatic brain injury. Dr. Joshua Lang is a neurologist and epileptologist at Alfred and Peninsula Health and a research fellow at Monash University Department of Neurosciences in Melbourne, Australia. Welcome, Dr. Lang.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, Dr. Armand.
We're both neurologists, and when we see patients for consults of post-traumatic epilepsy, especially in the ICU, the question usually that comes up is, what is this person's life going to look like after this? What's the progression? What's the prognosis? And I wanted to know from you, Dr. Lang, what sparked this study that we're going to be discussing today? And is that one of the questions that came up as you were gathering the data?
Definitely. I think that seizures in patients generally in hospital are sometimes challenging. Sometimes there are small clinical movements that patients may have, but there are also subtle electrographic seizures that we know about. And I think that there has previously been a lot of information about the prognosis of patients with traumatic brain injury, but it's not really known how seizures on top of the brain injury can affect the overall prognosis. And many people think that seizures themselves are just a marker of injury severity. But hopefully with this study, we sought out to differentiate both patients who have had moderate to severe TBI and a seizure and match patients with that cohort that did not have a seizure to try and get a nice clean signal of what these seizures actually really mean and what they and if they actually matter at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to get a baseline here, what exactly is early post-traumatic epilepsy and what do we currently understand about it?
Early post-traumatic seizures are very interesting. They occur during the acute phase of traumatic brain injury. They come broadly under the term of acute symptomatic seizures from many various seizures that occur in critical care and ill patients in the ICU. We know that they're not diagnostic of epilepsy. We know that early post-traumatic seizures don't necessarily correlate to those patients that have seizures down the line when they leave hospital. But this paper is interesting because there was the previous definition of early post-traumatic seizures that usually was around 7 days, but this was a relatively arbitrary measure. It's not evidence-based, and we know that patients are still in the ICU and still in hospital for longer than 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because sometimes we define early and the acute period differently. It could mean the first 24 hours, or I usually see the 7 day mark as the number.
That's it. And I think, as you mentioned, as a neurologist or epilepsy specialist coming to see these patients in the hospital, we need to think about the long-term prognosis in terms of seizures. Is this patient going to have a seizure in the future? What do these seizures mean in hospital? And what's the likelihood that we may need to intervene in a long term with anti-seizure medication?
Now, post-traumatic epilepsy, and I guess this is the time frame, when do we call it that? And what have you seen in clinical practice?
Yeah, I think that this is a very challenging question, and it's a great one, I think, for this paper. And hopefully this paper raises this question more broadly, and some follow-up studies can help to address it as well. But I think this 7 day mark, again, is not an evidence-based differentiator. And in this study, many of the patients were still in hospital post the 7 day mark and really exposed to those acute factors that we know that can cause seizures, such as irritation from hemorrhagic blood products around the brain. Also, a lot of other medical conditions of sepsis and pneumonia that we know happens to patients in the hospital. And we know that those seizures aren't really going to correlate with a risk of subsequent epilepsy down the track. So the definition in this paper was to include all seizures that occur during the acute phase and the acute admission in hospital, which may be up to a couple of weeks or even 3 weeks.
In your study here, how do you define traumatic brain injury? I know you looked at moderate to severe, correct?
That's right. Yeah. The definition of traumatic brain injury for this study was, again, also slightly different to some other studies have done in the past. So the definition that we used was from the abbreviated injury score head score, which is the AIS head score. And previous studies sometimes look at severity based off the GCS. The AIS head score is an anatomical measure. And we know from some studies that this can potentially outperform GCS as an indicator for traumatic brain injury in follow-up outcome studies. So this is why we chose this indicator for this study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's move right into your study. I know you looked at a large registry for patient participation, and this is a large cohort study, and the age range was greater than 18 years old. Now, can you tell us about the participants and the data collection?
Yeah. So the data registry that we used was a statewide trauma registry with 24-month outcomes. The state of Victoria is over 6 million people, and we used a study period of 15 years from 2005 to 2019. We used patients identified in the study with early post-traumatic seizures via the ICD-10 codes that were attributable to each patient following their admission. And again, as you mentioned, these patients were adults over the age of 18 and with a head injury score on the AIS score of 3 to 5.
And you excluded patients who had a previous diagnosis of epilepsy, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So that was intentional to try and evaluate the real effect of new seizures without the previous contamination of patients that may have an exacerbation of seizures in hospital following a TBI that have already got a diagnosis of epilepsy.
And how did you go about the chart review and follow-up? Was this through tablet, telephone, in terms of data accuracy and determining later implications for prognosis?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question. The data registry has its own data analysis team. So there's many staff that work in statistical analysis and data collection on this study. It's a very large study in Victoria and has been running for a number of years now.
Now, I am very excited to dive into these results. Walk us through what you found.
So firstly, importantly, the prevalence rate of early post-traumatic seizures was pretty much in line with other studies of 2.7%. And I think it's important to note that this is an Australian population and many of the patients would not have had continuous EEG. Continuous EEG is not widespread in Australia at the moment. So most of these seizures would have been clinically obvious seizures in hospital, which we know is potentially the tip of the iceberg. The next set of results was really looking at the risk factors for early post-traumatic seizures, and we used both a multivariable as well as a novel prediction model to assess for these clinical factors. And there were some common factors to both, which included increasing medical comorbidities, subarachnoid hemorrhage, subdural hemorrhage, and TBI severity as measured by the AIS score.
So in regards to patients with EPS, there was a higher prevalence of intracranial hemorrhage seen in these patients. Was there any correlation between whether or not they needed neurosurgical intervention?
It's a good question. The patients that had moderate to severe TBI obviously do have some increased rates of hemorrhages, especially those hemorrhages that may need neurosurgical intervention. Because this study looked at early post-traumatic seizures throughout the acute admission, there was no differentiation from the seizures that may have occurred pre or post the neurosurgical evaluation. So that wasn't specifically assessed in this study. But we do know from other papers that neurosurgical intervention does correlate to a potential increase in seizures immediately after. We also then looked at morbidity data as well as mortality, and we tried to match patients based on the previous risk factors that were identified for early post-traumatic seizures. So we showed that the morbidity for patients with early post-traumatic seizures in a matched cohort had a higher ICU admission, longer ICU admissions and ventilation, longer hospital length of stay, Usually patients were discharged to rehab rather than home. And overall, there were worse outcomes as measured by the Glasgow Outcome Scale, which also included an increase in mortality measured at 24 months with a relative risk of 2.14, which we thought was a novel finding for this study.
Now, there are many variables that can impact patient hospitalization, patient stay, and the course of an individual being treated after a traumatic brain injury. And it looks like in your analysis, you had some confounders that you accounted for in order to better see the correlation between factors such as mortality, ICU stay, and probability of developing EPS. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the reason for matching patients for outcomes in this paper were to really understand the outcomes independently of many other potential confounders that can happen in patients with traumatic brain injury. So the outcome data was corrected and patient matched for the individual risk factors that were related to early post-traumatic seizures. And therefore, we can see univariable analysis as well as multivariable analysis assessing with those independent variables being taken into consideration. So there generally across the board was an increased rate of morbidity and mortality in patients with early post-traumatic seizures. But once we accounted for those confounders, many of the outcomes still remained significant, which was important for this paper, especially the morbidity data of in-hospital metrics, but not in-hospital mortality. But importantly, the 24-month outcome data, which did show an increased mortality at 24 months, as well as an increase in post-traumatic epilepsy at 24 months as well.
Now, I wanted to ask this question because we are looking at epilepsy and seizures after TBI. And there are many factors that can contribute to an individual with this kind of injury having seizures. Do we know what the cause of the seizures were? Like, were there any provoking factors aside from the brain injury, like irritants, metabolic disorders? Like, is that something that's distinguished in the data set and the results?
Again, this is a very important question for this study. The patients that had early post-traumatic seizures did have some increases in medical comorbidities. These were not specifically mentioned in this study, but we saw that there was an increased rate of early post-traumatic seizures with a higher medical comorbidity score. And we also saw a correlation with a lower incidence of early post-traumatic seizures with a lower score, which was evident in the Lasso prediction model. This is interesting because there are many conditions that may contribute to in-hospital seizures. We know that inflammatory disorders or other metabolic disorders such as diabetes that may predispose to infections in hospital may increase the risk of acute symptomatic seizures. The specific reason for early post-traumatic seizures in this cohort was not recorded, as this is a little bit difficult in a large registry data study. And it's also difficult to attribute the risk associated with the seizure that occurred with a lot of things that we know is happening in the ICU. But the other risk factors that were significant for early post-traumatic seizures also were of acute blood products around the brain, which we know irritate the brain, such as subarachnoid hemorrhage and subdural hemorrhage.
So it looks like risk factors for EPS development, if you were to list them straight on out from your study, to be clear here, what are they?
I think the most important risk factors for early post-traumatic seizures in this study were the increasing number of medical comorbidities, were also the acute blood products of subarachnoid hemorrhage, subdural hemorrhage, as well as injury severity, which is measured by the AIS head score in this study. There are a couple of other interesting findings that had a lower significance value. There was an increased rate of early post-traumatic seizures from low falls. And I wonder clinically as a neurologist whether or not the low fall is a result of the patient having their first seizure.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I think it's difficult to know sometimes, especially when patients may have these falls and be unwitnessed. So that's another one But I think these acute factors predisposing to early post-traumatic seizures do really need to be differentiated from the longer term risk factors of developing right. post-traumatic epilepsy.
Now, should someone with EPS or these risk factors that you described be on lifelong seizure prophylaxis due to the risk of developing post-traumatic epilepsy? And are there distinguishing clinical scenarios that go for or against? Like, I want you to, let's say you have other neurologists who aren't epileptologists seeing these patients as a consult, like how would you say they should approach one patient versus the other and the question of long-term prophylaxis?
I think the question of long-term prophylaxis is one that we probably need to readdress internationally. It's an issue that has been going on for some time now, and that the research around traumatic brain injury and the use of continuous EEG has really changed practice. So we probably need to have a rethink about anti-seizure prophylaxis. So I think it's important to note that all of these patients that are in this study would have received the anti-seizure prophylaxis as recommended by the Brain Foundation, which is usually levetiracetam. Mm-hmm. So previously, there was some research to suggest that this should be stopped at the 7-day mark. But as I mentioned before, the 7-day mark is relatively arbitrary and many patients are still in hospital. So generally, I'd recommend that patients remain on their anti-seizure prophylaxis whilst they're in hospital during their acute admission. But whether or not patients need to have this medication ongoing is another question. And it's an important question to really understand the differences in clinical risk factors of early post-traumatic seizures and how they differ from post-traumatic epilepsy. Because we know that patients that have seizures in hospital don't necessarily develop epilepsy.
Right.
So I think that there is still some more understanding around the links between early post-traumatic seizures and those who develop post-traumatic epilepsy. But I think it's important that we reconsider whether or not the currently recommended anti-seizure prophylaxis that we have is enough, or whether or not it is actually targeted. And maybe we should target it a little bit better towards these risk factors, and then also consider those patients for a continuous EEG as well that might be able to further understand those risks.
Absolutely. It's largely individualized and a case-by-case situation.
That's right.
Dr. Lang, thank you so much for having this discussion with me. And I think this is wonderful work that you and your colleagues have done.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
This is Dr. Cynthia Armand for JAMA Neurology. This episode was produced by Jesse McQuarters at the JAMA Network. The audio team here also includes Daniel Morrow, Shelley Steffens, Lisa Hardin, Audrey Foreman, and Mary Lynn Furkeluk. Dr. Robert Golub is the JAMA Executive Deputy Editor. To follow this and other JAMA Network podcasts, visit us online at jamanetworkaudio.com. Thanks for listening.